My name is Walter Moore, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 11, 2005. My sponsor is Dave Schulte. He now lives in Reno. He's been my only sponsor. I have a home group. I am not homeless in AA. I have a commitment. I'm the assistant treasurer. We meet every single day in the gymnasium of a mental institution. That's where my sponsor found me. And much like Deneen, on the second day, he told me he was my sponsor. He made sure I had a book, gave me three questions. He expected an answer the next morning to all three questions and had my nose in that book from the get-go. You know, when I was a newborn, lying in the hospital, I was bald. I was broke. I was utterly helpless. I cried a lot. And if you'd asked me, Walter, how did you end up at the White Memorial Hospital? I would have had no answer for you. At 48 years old, I'm in a hospital. I'm bald. I'm broke. I'm hopeless, I'm crying a lot, little control over bodily functions. And if you'd asked me, Walter, how did you end up in the hospital again? I for once would have had no answer. I could not figure out how I ended up there. I wasn't raised that way. I was raised in a good family, oldest of five kids. My father was a doctor. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, raised all five of his kids. Church was a central part of my life. The whole family's life, went to church school. I was not one of those who couldn't wait to get out of church. I was happy being there. And at age 19, I had never seen anybody drunk. I had never seen anybody high. We had no cigarettes at the house. It's about as pure an upbringing as you can get. But I went to a college. It was a very strict college. We'd have been kicked out if we had any booze, and I was a freshman. I was 19 years old, and my roommate says, Walter, can you keep a secret? Well, yeah. So he locks the door, and he goes to his bed, pulls underneath the bed from Sansomite luggage, click, click, opens it up, reaches in, pulls out a bottle, Bacardi 151. I know. Oh, I do now. I didn't know that. First drink. So he took this little plastic cup. It's blue, about yay high, not very wide. Three-quarter filled it up with some Bacardi, colored it with some Coke, and he handed it to me and said, be careful. That's a good friend right there. At age 19, I had my first drink, and I had no idea it was humanly possible to feel that good. I was 19, 6'4", 165, as pure and chaste a virgin as you can get. That's not funny. Didn't really want to do medicine, but my father, I wanted to please my father. And suddenly none of those things really mattered. I don't know how that night ended. I didn't become some raging alcoholic right from the get-go. It took some hard work to get there. But at some point, I'm living at home. I was raised in Lancaster. I'm at home with mommy and daddy. I'm approaching the age of 30. I'm working at Lancaster Community Hospital as a monitor tech and ward secretary. I said, well, I'm going nowhere in my life. I need to get married. And then I said, well, where am I going to find a woman of any real value? I mean, and I wouldn't want the woman who'd want me. I'm a loser. She'd have to be a loser, too. So I'm going to tell you this story, but with a purpose. I found a way to get into law school with no college degree, not even an AA degree. I never even took the law school admission test. They made me take the baby bar. The pass rate that year was 17%. I passed it the first time. I passed the California bar first time, and that's while working full-time during the day. I know how to make a plan, how to stick to it, make sacrifices, accomplish something. When I tell other lawyers that's how I did it, they think I'm lying, but that's how I did it. When it came to drinking, because at some point I realized, boy, this is not going right, and I need to never drink again. And I used all of those abilities. Got a good mind. I got a good memory. I know how to stick to a plan. I want to be a success in life. And I used all of those abilities as hard as I could. And yet there was failure after failure after failure. You know, the fun times started to get less. I once went to a wedding reception where they had an open bar. So I made my own concoction of Bacardi 151 and champagne. It's rocket fuel to heaven, man. I fell in love with the wallpaper. It was silver foil, white velvet, weird pattern. I'm going, oh, you should feel this. It's so beautiful. Next thing I know, I'm at home. I figure it out. It's the next day, and I couldn't find my car for 2 days. So I said, well, just don't mix Bacardi 151 and champagne together, and that'll solve that. Of course, it got worse and worse. But I'm still hanging on. I found her at the hospital where I work. We got married up in Oregon. I was a brand new lawyer at the time. She had no idea how much I was drinking. I'd wait for her to go to sleep so I could go downstairs and drain the wine in the box, because they couldn't tell, you know, the little level thing, you know. She didn't really have enough of the hard stuff to get downtown where I needed to get. Boy, and I'm really struggling. And at some point I realized I got to stop drinking. I finally accomplished my education. I'm now licensed. I have a wife. So I decided to quit, not realizing how dangerous it was. Boy, I would go to my office, I'd turn off the lights, I would lock the door, pull the blinds, I'd pull the phone card out, and I'd lie down on the floor behind my desk because I didn't want people to be seeing me. I'm shaking and crying. I'm falling apart. I do not know how many days I did that. I didn't know to keep track because I never thought I'd be up here telling people like you this kind of stuff. At some point, I got really scared. On the back of our professional card, it had a confidential number. I called them. I'm the type that when I start crying, I can't talk. She needed to ask me yes and no questions. She told me, hang up, go to the hospital. This is down in Vista. I remember getting in my truck. I remember I'm starting to brown out on the edge. I realize I'm going out here. So I pulled off to the side of the road. I lean over. And next thing I knew, when I come to, I have no idea how long it was after that. It's pitch black. I'm completely lost. I eventually drive around and I get my bearings. I remember driving into the hospital parking lot. I don't remember walking in. I was in that hospital for 5 days. This is in 1992. Three people came to see me. One of them was a psychiatrist. Why are you trying to kill yourself, Mr. Moore? I said, I'm not trying to kill myself. I don't know what you're talking about. I just got married. I'm trying to save things, not kill myself. Pastor came to see me. He asked me if I'm willing to give my life to God. And I said, man, I was raised in church. I'll do dueling Bible verses with you. So in my hospital gown on the cold floor of the hospital, we both knelt. He said some words for prayer. I repeated them afterwards, and he left. My wife showed up, peeved out of her mind, told me never to come home. She was going to annul the marriage because I was a fraud, because I hadn't disclosed I was an alcoholic. Well, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I had no such clue. Right? She was so upset that what she did, because she worked at the hospital where I worked, so she knew my family, people at work, and friends. She handwrote a letter, long, long letter. Copied it and mailed it to everybody. That's not funny. I wish I'd have kept a copy of that letter, because she would have saved me an enormous amount of time on my fourth step, because she just bang, 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 the whole thing. Probably helped me with my 10th step even today, right? My mommy came to the rescue. She found a faith-based program. But they couldn't take me until Monday, so I went out to Palm Springs to dry up and drink a little. Showed up on Monday, and they said, Mr. Moore, we're happy to have you, but 3 months was our old timeline, but nobody seems to be able to do it, so we're going to ask you to do it for 1 year. I said, I'm in. For 1 year, I didn't practice my profession. I helped out with mowing lawns for 1 year. After the year, we had a ceremony, applause, plaques, centerpieces, white tablecloths. It was at that faith-based program that I heard about AA. They poo-pooed AA. What you need is God, church, maybe a little bit of counseling. Get to work. So I was quite curious. So I went to my very first meeting of AA in 1993. It was a noon meeting at a brick church there in downtown Riverside. Nobody greeted me. Nobody asked me if I had a book. Nobody asked me if I had a sponsor. Nobody asked me if I had a schedule of the meetings. I walked out of that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous saying they were right at that faith-based program. There is nothing for me in AA. It never even occurred to me to go back to AA when I started drinking again. I got to work, and for the next 14 or so years, I remained dry. Here's from my experience what dry means. It means no booze and no God. And I have to have one or the other. Because when I found myself in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, it explained all of that. Well, I'm on a first date with Edna at the Laker game. We were in the Senate seats. You didn't even have to get up. They'd bring you your drinks and your food and your change. And she orders some green girly foo-foo drink. And she turns to me and she says, Walter, would you like a drink? And I said, sure. You can't look like a wuss on a first date, you know? That moment, pivotal in my life. Because despite my good memory, despite my logic, you know what did not come to my mind at that moment? The fact that I had done a faith-based program for 1 year. The fact that I had to file for bankruptcy. The fact that I lost a house in foreclosure. That I had to repo a truck. That I had no money, no credit, nothing going on in my life. None of that came to my mind. I just said yes. No alarm bells, no fear, no say I deserve it. There was no rationalization at all. Years later, when I end up in Alcoholics Anonymous, came to Fred's story in chapter 3, the insanity chapter, I like to call it. That's just my name for it. Good guy. Good job, good wife, good reputation, goes out of town, does a good presentation, and then starting drinking. And the way he described it was, it was a curious blank spot. There was nothing going on. How in the world are you supposed to solve that? Seriously. Well, that resulted in a bunch of drinking that landed me even, I was dead man walking. I was not homeless, but I'm living in motels. My favorite was the Stardust Motel, room 16 in Redlands there. I was supposed to, this is the Tuesday before Thanksgiving of 2005. And I had a hearing out in Joshua Tree. I was an hour and a half late. The judge had already heard all the cases. It was all locked up. I realized I'm going to get sued. I'm going to lose my license. I'm going to get fired. And for the first time in my life, I didn't care. I'm done. It's freezing cold. I'm sweating through So outside, I sit on the curb because I couldn't stand very well. Chain smoking, cool cigarettes, crying. And I did something I'd never done before. I can't come into work. I'm not feeling good. And that, I don't remember the drive back to my motel room, but that started a 6-day blackout that I can't figure out. I ended up on the floor doing the rapture of the damned. I couldn't get back up. Eventually, I was able to. It's all very hazy. Eventually, I got scared again and made a call again. So with a shaky hand, I tried dialing 911 three times and screwed it up. So I gave up. Found out later, turns out, I called all three times. Two crews show up, right? Oh, my God. Strapped me to a gurney. Stop shaking, Mr. Moore. And they drove me to Redlands Community Hospital. Again, the psychiatrist. Again, the chaplain. I was in the hospital for 9 days. I remember very little of it. Then they said I ought to go to the Behavioral Medicine Center. That's where my home group is located now. But I was professionally known at that building, and I wasn't about to endure the shame of showing up there as a patient. So I went out to Biddy Ford. I loved Biddy Ford. I got a tremendous intellectual awakening at Biddy Ford. I love intellectual awakening. And I always felt that I got a head start on all the rest of you guys if it's an intellectual thing, right? I learned about pleasure center, reptilian brain, you know, dopamine levels, serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They asked me, invited me to look at maybe the church I was raised in, had I had some hidden resentments, that's why I drank. I said, well, maybe it's because you have arthritis and you've had numerous surgeries, all scarred up. Last 5 surgeries of many is 2 artificial knees, 2 artificial hips, artificial left shoulder. You know, all of that. That maybe being the oldest of 5 children, the birth order somehow condemned me to a role that promoted my drinking. It goes on and on and on, and I loved all that stuff. And when I went to leave, I did a relapse prevention plan using the Gorski grid and got applause from my counselor. I walked out of Biddy Ford with a lot of hope. The next day, I show up my morning meeting. The day after that, Schulte says, I'm your sponsor. And he started me on a path. Eventually, I told him about this relapse prevention plan. Oh. He says, well, I would suggest that you burn it and send it to God. Because it won't hurt God, but it'll kill you. Well, what's he doing trashing what little hope I have? I finally have some hope, and then he kills it. Thank God he told me the truth. And he said, you don't need an intellectual awakening. You don't need an emotional awakening. You don't need a mental awakening. You need a spiritual awakening. It's the only thing that's going to save you. I don't know about you, but I always tried to prove to my sponsor how much I'm in. So I went out to St. Margaret's where I knew he was going to be talking. I was brand new. He said, you know, I need some advice, sponsor. So I want to get a tattoo. I don't have any tattoos. But I wanted to show my commitment. You know how we do. Yeah, like I'm the only one. So there's going to be a cross. It's going to have my name on it. It's going to have my sobriety date. And in the 4 corners are going to be 4 circles. And one is going to be the AA symbol. One's going to be the NA symbol. One of them is going to be the Biddy Ford symbol, because they had their own. I said, well, I need something to make this symmetrical. What do you suggest for the 4th circle? And he squares up on me and says, if you do that, you're not going to have enough room on that cross for all your sobriety dates. Again, he's killing the hope. I now know why. Alcohol is spiritual to me. I kept finding me in the big book. The doctor's opinion says that alcoholics like me are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, that serenity, that comes at once without a sponsor and making coffee and showing up from taking a drink. I found me in Bill's story where he says, you know, people are all distraught because they lost all their money. You know, people were jumping off the skyscrapers. He's disgusted with all of that. And he said, he took a drink and the old fierce determination to win came back, to succeed came back. I said, boy, that's me. I got some Irish courage from taking a drink. And Bill, too, you know, Lois was yipping about his drinking. He said, Lois, don't you understand? Men of genius come up with their best constructions of philosophic thought when drinking. Which is the same thing as saying, don't you feel more creative, inspired, centered? I remember reading an article about the Zen art of drinking alone. For some reason, long before I showed up in AA, somehow I identified with that. It was the only way I could take a breath. The only way that I could... Did you ever take a little bit of a drink just to settle down so you could figure out how to stop drinking? And so now, too many people are telling me, don't drink no matter what. We have a lot of medical students that show up on part of their psych rotation. And I talked to them afterwards and I said, if you understood what alcohol does for me, you wouldn't waste one breath on what it does to me. Because you don't understand, I'm going to come apart if I don't drink. I have no other way to get there. And the idea that I could just endure, don't drink no matter what, don't leave before the miracle. And that's why I was so happy that isn't what's happening at this meeting. Didn't he do a great job? And I have hope for her because she's showing up with the other ladies in her sobriety group that are showing her, not just talking, showing her how to do it. Just come walk this path with us. And resign from the debate society and just do it. That's a whole lot different than just don't leave before the miracle. Come walk with us. Right? And so started going through those steps. And of course, the first thing I had to do was to get away from the addiction model. I like the addiction model. I clearly, under the DSM-5, qualify for ETOH substance use disorder. Clearly. Problem is that they're not treating the right thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, that we are treating in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the book says that my drinking, my hopeless state of mind, my hopeless state of body, the insanity of the first drink, and this condition that when I start to drink, I get thirsty and can't control how much I drink, and I drink till the lights go out, is the symptom, not the disease. If I keep treating the symptom, the drinking, I'll get drunk. And then I have to stick to only a spiritual awakening. Because it turns out I drank myself beyond human aid. And so I need a God who I always profess with my mouth that I believe to actually have an effective relationship with that power and then allow that power to work in me to change me in ways I cannot so that God can work through me. I did not come to AA to be a servant. I came to be served. Tell me, you know, give me some help. Give me an attaboy. Give me whatever, you know. Give me a job. Give me a loan. Give me a date. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, who comes to AA to be a servant? Isn't it strange that the antidote for selfishness is service. A servant. What time do servants show up to do their job? On time to do their job. I used to say, well, I showed up early to make coffee. Shut up. Servants show up on time to make coffee. It's just their job. I stayed late. No, you just did your job and then left. Why are you asking for all this extra credit? I used to say, you know, I've got 7 years or whatever it was. It's finally pointed out to me how selfish that is. If I've got 7 years, how did I get 7 years? And if it's a miracle, if it's a gift, how dare I not even mention the giver of the gift? I got it. No, I did it for a long time. I get to now say, God has graced me with the gift of sobriety. For 19 years, one day at a time, with all the ups and downs, with all the oops, with all the mess ups, sometimes getting real angry and giving everybody the finger, including God, but continue with the walk and just keep doing it. It's a remarkable thing that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, because once I said I'm utterly powerless to stay away from the booze and I'm utterly powerless to manage my selfishness and my self-righteousness and my self-centered fear and my impulsive lying to preserve a reputation that deserves saving. That I need then a God in step two to restore me to sanity. It's only solving the first part of the first step so that I don't take a drink. And then if I can't manage all this selfishness and the mess that is me, it's not just bad behaviors. It's my very nature. Then I need a new manager and ask God to be the new manager, but making a decision doesn't mean a thing. Two of us decided to go to Hawaii. Who was it that decided to go to Hawaii with me? There was somebody in here. Let's go to Hawaii. Well, make a decision to go to Hawaii is meaningless. Unless you take the actions, and there's a bunch of actions to get to Hawaii. So I make a decision to ask God to do that. And a fourth step I found out, I treated it as a way that when I'm dealing with transactions on the horizontal level, with dealing with people, oh, here's why it went wrong. I was demanding, and I should have been gracious. And the book says, no, both of them can be selfish. So knock it off. It isn't because it's what's blocking me from a relationship with other people, or the really sick one that is blocking me from a true and authentic relationship with me. You hear that? It's the purpose of a four-step. What's in my heart, in my selfish heart, selfish soul, that's blocking me from the very God that I need to restore me to sanity and to do the change in the heart? We know that from the 12th step. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result, not a, it's just a hook to the power. Plug in. That's it. The 6 and 7 are just the soul surgery. Oh, I've been working real hard on my character defects. They pop up every once in a while. That's not me. I mean, popping up, that's like saying that, it's like the wolf claiming, oops, my wolf ears poked out of my sheepskin, you know. I get to reveal my inner wolf that is me. And I don't have the power to do that soul surgery. And I can't just say I give them to God, because I'm not naturally a giver. It's a little bit. Let's say I actually had heart pains, and I go to the doctor. He said, Walter, you've got a bunch of clogs in your heart that's going to kill you. Three of them are big enough to going to kill you pretty soon. You better have some surgery. So I do step six, and I sign the consent to have the surgeon do the surgery. I show up at the appointed time and have the surgery. Let's say afterwards I run into Mark. Mark says, yeah, I know you're having those heart problems. You're looking pretty good. What happened? How did it work out? Well, Mark, it worked out really well. Because you see, remember those three blocks that were going to kill me? I gave them to God. You get it? I'm not. Turns out the only solution for selfishness is humility, and that all 12 of the 12 steps are designed to instill enough humility in this selfish heart, one day at a time, even sometimes one moment at a time, so that God has some kind of chance to work in me and then to work through me. And then it changes what I'm going to do with my amends, because I don't get to say, I'm really sorry I hurt you, Mom, because, you know, of my addiction. I got to make amends to that woman for everything I did that was selfish, whether I was drinking or not. She was scared to death because I missed all of Thanksgiving in 2005. The rest of the family were angry, but she was scared. Once I got sober, I owed it to my mom, not just to make that direct amends. I owed her some peace of mind for every day for the rest of her life, that she knew where her boy was and that he was doing okay. That's it. That wasn't easy. It isn't easy a lot of times with family members. So what? My father was the type. He poisoned himself to death with his pain pills and his drugs. He got so disgusting the rest of the family wouldn't go anywhere near him. And the only reason I did is because my sponsor made me, and I hated it. I hated it so much once that I had to go and see him in the middle of the day, and I jammed the car into reverse, goose it, and back up right into a pickup truck and ruined the whole back end of my car. He never once said, "Thank you for picking me up and taking me to get a hamburger." That's all he usually wanted, was just to get a hamburger. Man, I hated it. Eventually that started to soften without my even realizing it at the time. He died when I was 5 years sober. Family knew not to have any kind of funeral because we didn't want to have to endure the lies. He loved Pismo Beach, and we all went out to Pismo Beach several months later. They were still bad-mouthing him. And I started saying to myself, why are he's gone. Let it be. Let it go. And at some point, I realized that I loved my father. I was just like him. He was just like me. He was living in a motel. He drove the same newcomer car I did, a white Nissan, all the wheels scraped up. And here's what I believe today, that the spiritual program of action that are the 12 steps changed my spirit toward my Father, not just my actions, changed my spirit toward my Father. That the fellowship of the Spirit, the spiritual entity that we are in this meeting right now, changed my spirit toward my mother. And if you knew my mother, you'd know that's a miracle. And that this spiritual program has changed my spirit toward the IRS. No, I'm lying. I still have some growth to do. You're going, oh my God, really? Maybe someday. Ask Mark. I have no idea. Oh my God. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's easy for a big mouth and a big ego like mine to say that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. So what? Seriously, it's all noise. Clanging cymbals. I cannot act in a way that shows love and service to Alcoholics Anonymous unless I also incorporate the 12 traditions. These are additional spiritual principles, not for the group, for me, that I need to incorporate into my life so that my selfishness doesn't disrupt the unity of the group. The unity of this group is more important than my personal sobriety. I thought that was offensive at first. There's nothing more important than your own sobriety, Mr. Moore. You need to remember that. Okay. That's wrong. falls coldly afterwards. But as soon as I need a meeting to be the way I need it to be for my special needs and purposes at the moment so that I can suck the air out of the room and feel better, is there anything unselfish about that? It's pure selfishness. I used to say that that's my meeting. I'm going to my meeting. So I just didn't, knock that off. It's not your meeting. It's God's meeting. It's right there in Second Tradition. It's my home group, but it's not my meeting. Because, boy, I know how to take care of it. I know how to take charge of everything. And I may even be right in the things that I think need to be done, but it doesn't need to come from me, and it doesn't help my ego at all. It may be disruptive to somebody else, so shut up, Walter. And to go all the way through all of those. Because Jamel read it. That 12th tradition says that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions. I thought anonymity was confidentiality. I was wrong. There is confidentiality between a sponsor and a sponsee when they share their fifth step. No question about that. But that's not what the 12th step is talking about. It's telling me, Walter, you need to be anonymous in all the good that you think you do for the group or for anybody. Shut up. Don't take the credit. Don't avoid taking the blame when you're wrong. That's not my nature. I want to be in charge, not a servant. That'll be a lifelong process for me, and I know from my own sponsor with his experience with over 40 years that that's still an area of spiritual growth for him. It's not easy. Nobody all of a sudden becomes a saint. And boy, as soon as I'm a bleeding deacon and I want things my way, you know what always ends up happening? I end up in a big old fight with the other bleeding deacons, and then it's a big bloody mess. You've been to steering committees, come on. Oh my goodness. Isn't it a miracle that any of us are sober, especially those that are new, right? How in the world did I stay sober with no spiritual tools, just following around some other people? How did that happen? I've got nothing, and I'm raw. I can't quit crying. I get this deep itch in my teeth. I'm already obsessed with, because I only had 3 dress shirts at the time when I was brand new, and the humiliation of going to the dry cleaner every other day. Can I get these tomorrow? That's what I'm obsessed with. I hated my newcomer car. I'd go to functions where I didn't want the other people, the professionals, to see my car. So I'd park in the hotel next door and I'd walk. And then I'm at a spot where I can wake up in the morning and know I'm okay. Even though now sometimes my character defects can rise like the phoenix out of the ashes in full bloom in the morning. And so every day I go to my morning meeting and try to be of service. Sometimes it's just to remember their name. Sometimes it's just to thank the person that made the coffee. You know how many people make coffee and nobody says thank you for the coffee? We get to thank, who's the one guy in here that walks on water? Where is he? No, that's no. Who's the guy that mops the floor? Did he leave? Where is he? Did he leave? Too embarrassed to raise his hand. Because I think the only ones who walk on water are the ones who mop the floor. On a wet floor, they walk on water. God enters really through the wound. the bigger the wound, the bigger the opportunity for God to operate. The problem with egotistical people like me is that then when the wound starts to heal, I'm feeling pretty good, so I can be a little bit more independent. And it's easy for me to drift away from the simple program that is Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm in real trouble every time I do it. And it's my natural drift. And so my prayer for anybody who's new or about to be new again, you're here, that you can't stand the way you're feeling right now. You can't stand the way you're living. You can't bear the thought of dying the way you know you're going to die, because it's ugly. It hurts. That you're willing to go to any length to have a different life. And if you're willing to go to any length to do that, we'll go to any length to help you. Thanks for calling.